It's Thursday, August 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Welcome and hello. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Iran turns over information on its nuclear program. Does it offer any new details?
The challenge for the EU is to bring all those different member states together around the table and come up with a common solution that will have to be agreed upon by all those member states.
European nations divided on migration issue. Also ahead, more volatility in global financial markets. A country music power duo reunites. It's all on today's International Edition. The head of the UN Atomic Agency watchdog says Iran has turned over substantive amounts of information on its past nuclear activity, but cautions that it's too early to say whether any of the documents contain new information. Yukiya Amano, chief of the International Atomic Energy Agency, spoke with reporters Tuesday in Vienna.
We are now studying the explanation in writing, which we received on the 15th of August. We cannot discuss the details of the explanation submitted by Iran. Next step will be for us to study, review, and ask questions by the 15th of September. And then Iran and IAEA will engage in the substantiation process. At this stage, it is premature to say if there is any new information or not. We are now analyzing it. And we need to see the whole picture to have assessment.
Sanctions relief for Iran hinges on what the IAEA has to say about Iran's past and present nuclear efforts. The separate international agreement reached last month between six world powers and Tehran seeks to ensure that Iran cannot build a nuclear weapon. Shahram Akbarzadeh is an Iranian analyst with Australia's Deakin University, and he told VOA's Victor Beatty the documents turned over to the IAEA reflect Tehran's apparent willingness to cooperate in order to gain sanctions relief.
What this shows is that the Iranians are extremely serious about getting that deal signed up with the international community. It is not certain, to my mind, how significant the relevance of military aspect is. It may be just old material that has been recycled.
Iran insists its program is peaceful, but apparently has limited UN inspectors to its sites.
Well, Iran has been reluctant, of course, to allow international inspections on its sites because Iran would see this and has always insisted that any inspection would have to be part of a package, and the package would have to include the removal of sanctions. So Iran has resisted inspections while sanctions are on. But the situation is very different now with the prospect of removing sanctions and Iranians' willingness to allow unprecedented access to its sites, which includes, I might add, some military sites.
Iran's envoy to the IAEA, Reza Najafi, declined to explain whether IAEA inspectors would be allowed to inspect Iran's Parchin military site south of Tehran, where some accuse the Islamic Republic of having conducted nuclear bomb-related experiments. Do you think that will be possible?
I think the Iranian officials would not want to make any promises either way about access to specific sites until they have the deal signed up by the Congress and by the Iranian Majlis. Any information that the Iranian officials would divulge at various media interviews would potentially be used by critics of the deal in the internal domestic debate to undermine and discredit the deal. So that explains largely why officials refrained from talking about that.
You mentioned that Iran seems to be serious about holding up its end of the bargain. Does this have everything to do with lifting of sanctions?
It has everything to do with the lifting of sanctions. The Iranian economy had effectively come to a standstill under international sanctions, and the Iranian government, including the supreme leader, had realized that the survival of the regime very much depends on the lifting of sanctions. So this is really an existential matter for the Iranian government, and they're pushing full throttle in that direction.
Well, Shahram, speaking of sanctions, a large cheering crowd is reported to have greeted President Hassan Rouhani in the western city of Hamadan Tuesday, following reports that those sanctions could be lifted as early next year. How important will it be for the Iranian people that these sanctions are lifted?
Sanctions are a blunt force. They affected the Iranian economy, Iranian population, just as much they affected the regime. So for the population, this is a number one priority. In fact, President Rouhani came to office with the promise of removing the sanctions. So this is very important for the population, and it's very important for the popularity of President Rouhani, because he will have delivered on what he had promised.
Akbar Zeta says the absence of any opposition to the nuclear agreement by the supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei tells him that the Iranian regime is prepared to rejoin the international community. However, he says Tehran will not change its regional policy, such as its close relations with Hezbollah in Lebanon and militia groups in Iraq. Meanwhile, a vote in the U.S. Senate is expected by September 17th, and if it's rejected, a likely presidential veto would be difficult to override. Well, staying with the Iran deal, we have International Edition's G. Abby Lee here in Studio 22. G, what are some of the Twitter handles that people can follow to get the latest news on this agreement?
Hi, Jim. I mentioned this handle before when it was launched, but let me mention this again. It's the Iran Deal at the Iran Deal, and the White House manages the account. In the description, it asks people to tweet questions and promises to set the record straight about the nuclear agreement. The account retweets a lot of Washington officials' support for the agreement. For example, it shared a tweet by Connecticut Representative Elizabeth Estey, who tweeted a link to her statement supporting the Iran nuclear deal. She's on Twitter at Rep. Esty. Another account, Jim, you might want to follow is the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. Its handle is at IAEA.org. Regarding the nuclear deal, the account sent out this tweet Tuesday. Hashtag IAEA Board of Governors authorizes verification and monitoring in hashtag Iran in light of Security Council resolution.
Well, gee, of course, we want to be balanced. What about accounts that are against the deal?
Well, funny you ask that, because there's an account that directly criticizes the Iran deal account. Its handle is at the Iran bomb, and it argues the agreement paves the way for Iran to develop nuclear bombs. It goes on to say, we'll set the record straight and refute the lies spread by the White House propaganda account at the Iran deal.
Wow, that's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. What does it tweet about?
It urges people to join rallies against the Iran deal and actively promotes anti-Tehran sentiments. For instance, it asks the LGBT community to oppose the deal because engaging in homosexual relationship is illegal in Iran. I can kind of see what they're trying to do here, but not sure if there's a strong correlation between the nuclear development and LGBT rights. Jim?
Well, thank you for that analysis, G. G. Abby Lee graces us with her presence here in Studio 22 each and every day, and she can grace you with her presence on Twitter. Follow her at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated one quarter of the Earth's population uses the services of the Internet. Two-thirds of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
This is VOA's International Edition. Chinese stocks tumbled further Wednesday, and other Asian shares fluctuated wildly despite Beijing's latest moves to stimulate growth in the world's second-largest economy. China's central bank late Tuesday cut interest rates 0.25% and told banks that they could hold less money in reserve. That move makes it easier for consumers to buy products and for companies to build factories and hire people. Markets initially reacted positively to the moves, with shares higher Tuesday in Europe and briefly in the United States, but Wednesday saw another frenzied day of trading in Asia, with markets swinging between big gains and losses. Volatility has caught the attention of Alexis Christophorus, who joins us from our New York bureau.
Volatility continues to be the word of the day on Wall Street. Traders remain cautious after a wild couple of days for global stock markets. U.S. stocks rallied strongly Wednesday morning following a volatile day in China. Some of those gains faded by midday. Tech companies led the gains higher for U.S. stocks, with Apple, Google, and Intel rising at least 2.5%. Banks also did well, with J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup increasing more than 2%. And Cameron International Corp. soared 40% after agreeing to be bought by the oil company Schlumberger in a $14.8 billion deal. A money manager at Stifel Nicolaus said this type of short-term stock rally should not be much of a surprise given recent market weakness. He said nonetheless, investors are resetting their global growth expectations. New York Fed Bank President William Dudley said the upheaval in global markets has reduced the case for raising rates in September. Traders are now pricing in a 1-in-4 chance the central bank will act at its next meeting, down from almost even odds before China's surprise currency devaluation earlier this month. Jim?
Well, Alexis, I understand all this volatility has also had quite an effect on oil.
That is right. New data has oil traders forgetting about China, at least for the moment, and focusing once again on oversupply worries. Oil prices fell after weekly U.S. inventory data showed a surprise drop in gasoline demand and record-high stockpiles of crude oil and petroleum products. Analysts have warned that gas demand is likely to wane at the end of the busy summer driving season, which could weigh on oil prices along with seasonal refinery maintenance. Gasoline futures recently traded down 4.5%. Oil prices have plunged in recent weeks on concerns the global glut of crude that halved oil prices in 2014 has yet to shrink. WTI crude oil settling at $38.60 a barrel, down 71 cents or nearly 2%. Jim?
Well, the markets may be up or down, but Alexis Christophorus is always with us. Thank you so much, Alexis.
Thank you.
In Austria later today, yet another crisis. Leaders from the Balkan states are to attend a summit in Vienna on European integration, but it's the immigration crisis that is expected to be high on the agenda. In the past few days, a surge of tens of thousands of migrants has passed from Greece into the Balkans toward Western Europe. Countries on the front line of the crisis are demanding help from European partners. Jeffrey Young for International Edition spoke with Angelos Chrysogolos. He's based in Washington and is a fellow with the Europe Program at Chatham House in London, and discussed Europe's, and especially the European Union's, response to the migration crisis.
The EU does not have a centralized government-like approach to migration. It's really about coordinating the needs and the priorities of many different member states. And as the membership of the EU has increased, and as the EU today includes countries with different geographical positions, some of which are close to areas of crisis, but others are further away from areas of crisis, and also countries with different economic development, meaning that different countries of the EU are attractive to various degrees to migratory flows, it means that different EU member states face different pressures from this migration problem. So the challenge for the EU is to come to bring all those different member states together around the table and come up with a common solution that will have to be agreed upon by all those member states.
Now, pushing against that resolution, obviously, we have a problem in a number of the European countries with nationalist elements, people within the countries that say, no, lock the door, bolt it shut, put a guard in front of it. No, we don't want these people. Send them someplace else. And please explain for people how these nationalist forces, these internal forces, are causing a problem in reaching a resolution by the EU on this migration crisis.
That's a critical dimension. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to think about it because we're talking about human beings here. But the attitude in various member states really is not in my backyard. And this has been quite evident in the effort by the European Commission some months ago to institute a voluntary relocation scheme for a number of refugees within European countries. You see some European countries, such as Greece or Italy, facing immense first wave pressures. These are the countries where migrants land at first, and it creates enormous pressures on those countries. And we're talking about Greece and Italy. These are also countries in the Eurozone South, which means that they're countries that institute austerity. And there are these are countries that already see the rise of nationalist parties that are also fed by the economic crisis. And the migration further strengthens that. Then you see more affluent countries, such as Germany and the Netherlands. These are the countries where migrants eventually want to go to, or the UK. And there you have radical right parties that have always been anti-migration.
Washington-based Angelos Chrysogalos, he's a fellow with the Europe program at Chatham House in London. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Once upon a time, Naomi and Wynonna Judd were once one of the top country music acts here in the United States. They won 5 Grammy Awards plus numerous Academy of Country Music and Country Music Association Awards. Now the duo is reuniting, and International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about Girls' Night Out.
If you're a fan of country music, the names Naomi and Wynonna Judd are very recognizable to you. But we haven't heard from the pair known as the Judds since the early 1990s. Nikki, that was when Naomi was diagnosed with hepatitis C.
Yes.
And she thought she'd never perform again.
Yep.
But we have good news.
Yes! She overcame, and of course, another residency is now in the works, another tour. They're going to be in Las Vegas October 7th through the 24th. It's a residency. It's called Girls' Night Out, a nod to their 1985 number one hit.
It's a girl's night out, honey, there ain't no doubt. I'm going to dance every dance till the boys go home.
This is going to be the first joint performance for the mother duo in 5 years. They did the last encore tour back in 2010, 2011. The concert is going to feature some of their biggest hits. They're doing the set list. They're going to be doing Mama, He's Crazy, Why Not Me, Love Can Build a Bridge, which you know is the song of the title track of their last studio album. And it also marks their 25th anniversary of that album.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be at the Venetian in Las Vegas?
Yes, at the Venetian. And also Wynonna is going to be performing tracks from her solo career as well.
Yeah, now Wynonna, we should mention, did go on to have a rather successful solo career after her mom had to leave the road.
Yes.
Because, you know, hepatitis C is a very serious disease,
yes,
and the rigors of touring, Naomi had no choice. I remember it was quite heart-wrenching for her.
Yeah, yeah. And also because you can die from hepatitis C.
Right.
So, and Winona is saying this tour, this residency rather, is, she said she looked at it as an incredible opportunity to celebrate her mom.
Hmm.
And she even said, when this opportunity was presented to me, she was like, I had to take it. I have a new album coming out soon, and this is the perfect way to honor the roots that gave me the wings to fly.
Wow.
Now, this residency thing, this is not the first time that a country act has done this. We had Brooks and Dunn have also done this.
Yes.
Reba McEntire has also done this.
Shania Twain.
Shania Twain has also done this.
Yes.
And so it's a way for people to go and see some of their country favorites without the country favorites having to go all over the country.
Also, Winona is working on a new album.
Oh.
Yes, so this is a great segue. It's a project with her husband. She's calling it, you know, it's vintage yet modern, but I think it's coming out next year.
All right, well, we look forward to that, and we look forward to hearing from you. You can send us a tweet at VOA underscore music. You can also send one to at VOA underscore IE for International Edition. And you can listen for Nikki's show, which is Country Hits USA, on our website, www.voanews.com.
Mama, he's crazy.
Been listening to International Edition. You can find more about the Judds and us at our website at voanews.com. We are, of course, on Facebook. VOA Asia is the popular place to be. Stop by there and like us, if you like. On Twitter, we're at VOA underscore IE. I'm there, too, at VOA Stevenson. You can always email us, voaasia@voanews.com. We thank you for joining us. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Ida Nutku. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On August 18th, 82-year-old Khaled al-Assad, a prominent Syrian archaeologist and the head of antiquities for the ancient city of Palmyra for more than 40 years, was brutally murdered by the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. In May 2015, ISIL seized control of Tadmor, which contains the historic ruins of the ancient city of Palmyra. Despite the danger that prevailed with ISIL's previous murderous acts and destruction of other cultural heritage sites, al-Assad remained in the city to protect its treasures and helped evacuate the city museum prior to ISIL's takeover. The United States condemns in the strongest possible terms this murder of a man who dedicated his life to preserving Syria's cultural treasures, said U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby. Like so many of ISIL's victims, his life and extraordinary work stand in stark contrast to that of his barbaric killers, he said. These attempts to erase Syria's rich history will ultimately fail. ISIL's damage and looting of historic sites in Syria and Iraq, which have been preserved for millennia, have not only destroyed irreplaceable evidence of ancient life and society, but have also helped fund its reign of terror inside those countries. Mr. Kirby said, as we respond to the brutality and suffering ISIL inflicts on the Syrian and Iraqi people, we continue to urge all parties in both countries and in the international community to deprive ISIL of this funding stream by rejecting the trafficking and sale of looted artifacts. All those who destroy important cultural property must be held accountable.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.